This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Cottaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast, produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans not affiliated with the major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cottaway, and of course, Marcus Cornucopia Vanderberg. What's going on, fellas? It's Thanksgiving.
What up?
What's up, Nate?
Not much. You guys got any big plans for the holidays?
No big plans for me. Going to my girlfriend's mom's house, so.
Uh-oh.
No, it's not the first time I've been there for Thanksgiving, so no.
Okay, is this the big meeting?
No.
Okay.
Do you two have a good relationship?
Yeah, we do.
Why wouldn't you have a good relationship with Marcus Vanderberg? He's a nice young fella. Drives a nice car. He's not a thug. He keeps his pants pulled up. He doesn't get drunk at black journalist conventions and cuss people out. He's a good dude.
Sorry, Mike Smith. Love you. I don't know if Mike was drunk at that thing. That was more on what's his face?
Big Hugh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're done. Mike was the victim. Take that back.
You gone.
We're all the victims. We're all the victims.
According to Kanye, we are.
Oh, yeah. We got big stuff to talk about in segment four coming up. We got Kanye talk, of course. We've got what we're thankful for, and we'll bring back a Thanksgiving edition of the list. It's going to be some good times today, but before we get into any of that, we got to start off in the A block, and once again, surprisingly, we're not starting with the NFL. We are starting with the National Basketball Association, and man, it is got to be tough for all fans of the Chicago Bulls. So send our condolences out to Mike Wilbon and the Chicago fans out there. But for those that haven't heard about the bad news pertaining one Derrick Rose, Brother Marcus, why don't you let the people know what's going on in Chicago?
Yeah, so another season and another Derrick Rose knee injury that sidelines him for the year. He suffered another non-contact injury on Saturday against the Portland Trail Blazers. He had to leave the game, and MRI showed that he tore his meniscus. So not as bad as a torn ACL, but still enough to keep him out for the rest of the year. And considering that this guy is only 25, I believe, and now has had two knee injuries in both knees, it makes you wonder how long he will be able to play in this league, because clearly his body is not going to be able to support his style of play, which is pretty aggressive. He's one of the most explosive guys in the NBA. So now I just feel bad for, you know, not only Derrick Rose, but the Bulls fans who came in this season thinking they had a legit shot at the title. I mean, Bill Simmons had them as his number one team and dethroning the Miami Heat, but now we're looking at a situation where Chicago might miss the playoffs.
Well, let's not get a little carried away. You're looking at a Chicago team that made a deep playoff run without Derrick Rose. And I'm not going to say that they're better without Derrick Rose, but they certainly know how to play as a team. They have the toughness, they have the coaching to galvanize themselves and at least be competitive without Derrick Rose, who can be a bit of a ball stopper considering he's a scoring point guard. But I look at this injury and I'm just thinking to myself, Chicago, it's over. And I'm not talking about this season. I'm talking about this franchise. you guys are not winning a championship until the next guy comes along. You know how many stars have to align themselves in the NBA in order for you to be a championship caliber team? How many, you know, you have to have that big three. It's the haves and the have-not in the NBA, and the Bulls without Derrick Rose just became a have-not. Yeah, they may be a good competitive story and a Cinderella team in the playoffs, but they're not winning any type of championship anytime soon. It's now down to about five or maybe four teams that can win a championship now.
Well, I don't think they're going to make that deep playoff run at all this year, Alfred. I mean, you talk about the success they had last year without Derrick Rose, but there is one big, or should I say small, component missing from this current Bulls team, and that's our boy out there in Denver, Crypto Nate, Lil Nate Robinson, who, you know, for all of his knucklehead tendencies, you know, he really was an offensive catalyst for that team last season. And I don't know about you, Marcus, but if I'm Bulls management right now, instead of trying to salvage this season, I think it may be time to start thinking about, you know, what assets can we give up to set ourselves up in good position for next year.
I agree, and as much as Tom Thibodeau wouldn't want to go through a rebuilding process, it just made sense with Dane being a free agent at the end of the season. Carlos Boozer, who is someone who's overpaid, but the right team would take him on for a playoff run. If you were able to move those two pieces and start to rebuild around, you know, hopefully a healthy Rose next year and Noah and possibly a lottery pick in this deep NBA draft, and I think you'd be in good shape. And don't forget last year, Marco Bellinelli was also another guard who was able to score points. So those are two assets that they don't have. Last year they built their team without Derrick Rose in mind, and this year they sort of went a different direction. So now it's really exposing what they don't have on the bench.
Yeah, the Bulls need to rebuild immediately. They need to tank immediately because going 45-37 or being one of those middle-of-the-road teams that goes deep into the playoffs, maybe a 5-6 seed will do nothing for them as far as their future is concerned. Yeah, we'll be talking about how great of a coach Tom Thibodeau is, but what you need to do is be terrible so you can have a shot at one of those high lottery draft picks that will be the talk of the summer of 2014, and so you can also be able to unload and bring in some pieces, maybe not to build around Derrick Rose, maybe to build in spite of Derrick Rose, and be prepared to have that replacement ready in case he goes down again, which will be a real possibility.
Right, and that's a great point, Alfred. I think that you may have to start looking at Derrick Rose right now the way that NFL teams look at Mike Vick, in the sense of this is a dude with talent, but his body is not reliable. And so my two questions for you guys is, question number one, do the Bulls make the playoffs? I mean, they're in a bad situation right now, but it is a terrible Eastern Conference. I mean, outside of Miami and Indiana and maybe Brooklyn if they get their act right, I don't see any, you know, big juggernauts coming out of the East. So do the Bulls make the playoffs? And number two, will we ever see D. Rose, you know, he might not be the level he was in his MVP season, but will we see a D. Rose that is at least all-star caliber ever again? Alfred.
I want this. This is such a weird year. It's like everybody's playing chicken. Like, who's going to tank the most? Who's going to be the first to the finish line and get an Andrew Wiggins or Jabari Parker? I think the Bulls are too proud to tank or to even go down, you know, without a fight. So I say yes. They do barely make the playoffs as an 8 seed. And I say yes, maybe given a couple of years from now, I see one or two playoff years for Derrick Rose, just not the level that we expected.
I say the Bulls do not make the playoffs. When you're losing in Utah, I mean, that just, the writing's on the wall. They're in the middle of a six-game road trip here. They're 0-4 on this road trip. Even in the bad East, I think some of the teams that are struggling in the East, like a Brooklyn, like a New York, like a Boston, when they get Rondo back, they decide not to trade him. I think they will start to rise up in the standings, and Chicago will be outside looking in. And I think Derrick Rose will be an all-star again. He'll just have to change his game. He needs to work on his jump shot. He needs to start becoming more of a perimeter player as opposed to trying to slash to the hole. And I think he can, you know, he can figure that out. He's still young enough where he can adapt his skill set and become an all-star once again.
I agree with you, Marcus, in the sense that I don't see Chicago making the playoffs this season, even though, you know, I got a lot of respect for Tibbs, man. I think Tibbs is one of the best coaches in the league, and I think any franchise other than, you know, a San Antonio or other than, you know, the Clippers or, you know, the Heat, they'd be lucky to have Tibbs sitting on the bench. But in terms of Derrick Rose, I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to say and you can fact check me here. I'm not gonna say he's gonna be an All Star again, but I'm gonna say he's gonna have a Grant Hill career. Grant Hill was never an All Star after his injury, was he?
His injury in Detroit?
Yeah. After the Detroit, like when he went to Phoenix and whatnot.
I can check.
Definitely not when he went to Phoenix.
Okay, because I think, you know, Grant Hill was a serviceable player after that injury, but he was never back to the level he was. I think Derrick Rose can be a serviceable player. He's not going to be a max player anymore, in my opinion, just because, you know, when you had two injuries to your knees at this point and the way he plays his game, I don't think, you know, that speed, that explosiveness, that first step, that's what makes Derrick Rose so effective. And without that, you know, he's either going to have to adjust and modify his game, or the team is going to have to, you know, create a whole new game plan. So I don't see him being an All-Star again, but I do see him being, you know, a solid player.
Grant Hill was an All-Star two times after the injury, or three times, 2000, 2001, 2005.
Well, damn, Grant Hill.
He was in Orlando when he was an All-Star last.
Okay, so yeah, he might not even be. Derrick Rose might not even be to that level. But I think he will be a solid, serviceable NBA point guard, though.
They're going to be able to be competitive moving on from Derrick Rose. And I'm not just using a template of last year. I'm just saying, based on the roster they have this year, it's been a pretty solid roster, even with Derrick Rose. You know, scoring as he did, I think they'll be able to hold their own.
Is it worth it even trying to be competitive, though? You know, is it worth it trying to keep these pieces? And, you know, like Marcus was saying, you know, dang, Boozer. You know, you've got guys at other teams that want to make playoff runs, could use. Why not go ahead and take advantage of that and, you know, chalk this season up as a lost season?
And we could sit there and say that. I just really think the culture of Chicago and that blue-collar mentality, I just think they're just too competitive and proud to just throw in the towel at this point, especially, you know, Tom Thibodeau now has a chance to forge his legacy as an elite coach. And by doing, you know, by being competitive again without Derrick Rose, I think he's going to do just that.
Well, you guys talk about competitive. You talk about being proud. There's somebody that lives in your fair city that fits both of those descriptions. He goes by many names. He goes by the Black Mamba. He goes by Kobe Bean. Some people call him, you know, number 8, number 24, depending on, you know, your particular beauty, man. You
know what I call him now? I call him overpaid, but continue on.
Uh-oh.
I already know where this is going. So, Kobe signing the new contract. Alfred, first of all, because, you know, you were the one that really brought this to my attention after this went down. What are your thoughts on Kobe signing this extension with the Lakers?
Stupid, 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 stupid move on all parts. It's star humping by the LA Lakers organization.
You saying it's stupid worship on Kobe's part?
All parts. In a way, yeah, stupid on Kobe's part, because if you look at the mentality that Kobe had going into this, you know, I did not think Kobe was going to take the pay cut he needed to take for the Lakers to eventually be a dynasty type team again. Because Kobe would say in interviews, I don't want to be that guy. You know, no, there's no way in hell I'm taking a pay cut. I don't want to be that guy who goes out irrelevant because he didn't get paid enough in his final 2 years. Well, guess what, Kobe? Now that you're getting paid, you're going to go out as the irrelevant guy who didn't win any championships, because with the money they paid Kobe Bryant, they will not be able to build the team they needed to build. They will probably be competitive enough to where they're not going to be able to take advantage of that loaded draft. It's like so many confluence of events had to happen for the Lakers in order for them to just load up in 2014 as a lot of fans would have wanted to. But Kobe Bryant taking this, you know, big deal, that has hurt the Lakers, and that has completely ruined that from ever happening. All this stuff was in the Lakers' control, and they've already screwed it up.
Preach, my brother. Preach. And you know who you can blame for all this? Dwight Howard. I feel like they were so embarrassed put to shame begging for this dude to stay, that their worst fear was to have another Dwight Howard situation this offseason where they were either, you know, begging Kobe to stay, or Kobe was, you know, shopping around with other teams. So they said, well, look, we'll solve this now. We'll give this man the most money per year in the NBA. And of course he's going to say yes, without even seeing how he's done post Achilles injury. Just a ridiculous deal. And I really can't fault Kobe too much, because look, if If a team is coming to me and say, hey, this is what we're offering you, of course you're going to say yes. But at the same time, I hope Kobe at least looked at the numbers and did the math and said, hey, you know, if you're paying me this much money, then what exactly are you doing? What are you going to do with the rest of the money that we have left? Because now you're paying your backcourt next season between Nash and Kobe. That's $35 million locked up between those two. A combined age of 76 next year. Yeah, it's nice that you have the rest of the, you know, the rest of your roster is going to be free agents. But when you're paying that much money to two guys who are that old and maybe that fragile, you're setting yourself up for trouble.
Yeah, essentially, isn't that like half of the salary cap just right there?
Yep. And Nash is off the books after next season. But you know that leaves you with one year of Kobe, so I don't know what the Lakers are doing. I don't know what they have up their sleeves. I do not expect another title run for Kobe Bryant as a Laker unless they can pull off some miracle or something, but I just don't see it with the way the salary cap is structured at the moment.
Yeah, to me, you know, when this whole thing went down, I just kind of shook my head. I think, like you were alluding to, Marcus, it's kind of like, you know, the Lakers got dumped by the fine girl, so they're like, that's okay, I don't care about you no way. I got this dance over here. Sure, she might have one leg and no arm, but she love me and she gonna be here as long as I keep giving her this money. And that's the way they approach the negotiation with Kobe. You know, I was talking with KME, Chris from LA, a little bit earlier today, and he was just on this kick about how this was a great move for Los Angeles, and you know, it shows loyalty to Kobe. And I'm all well and good with loyalty to Kobe. But, you know, you said you can't blame Kobe, Marcus. I can blame Kobe because this, to me, is a similar situation to what Alfred's big criticism of Peyton Manning has been over the years. In the sense that you take up so much of the salary cap, the team is so much geared towards what you do that it leaves little room to improve the rest of the squad. And I don't see the Lakers winning a championship anytime within the length of Kobe's contract. You know, I think what he is, you know, he's going to add some more points to his career totals. He's going to, you know, probably show up in another All-Star game, but this is it. This is basically the grand tour, the grand finale for the Kobe Bryant era in Los Angeles. And I think it's a shame because there was at least one more title that they're leaving on the table. And with this contract, I don't know if they're going to be able to get it.
And the best part
I'm glad you brought up – I was going to say I'm glad you brought up loyalty, Nate, because it's so funny. That's what the local spin media is – preaching is loyalty. You listen to people, the national perspective, your Bill Simmons, your Chris Broussard, they're all saying it's a ridiculous deal. They know what's up, but the people who are beholden to the LA media are trying to spin this and say, oh, it's a loyalty move. LA is the least loyal market in all of America. If you're not good, they're not going to show up. You want to talk about loyalty? Let's see when Kobe Bryant and the Lakers take the floor in 2014 and they're not very good. Let's see who shows up after all that loyalty.
The best part about this is Kobe is actually surprised that people are criticizing him for signing this deal. Like, how dare you ask me to take less money than I did? There's a great quote from Woj from Yahoo Sports. Adrian Wojnarowski talked to Kobe tonight in Washington. Kobe said this: most of us have aspirations for being businessmen when our playing careers are over. But that starts now. You have to be able to wear both hats. You can't sit up there and say, well, I'm going to take substantially less because there's public pressure, because all of a sudden, if you don't take less, you don't give a crap about winning. That's total bullshit. I'm very fortunate to be with an organization that understands how to take care of its players and put a great team out on the floor. They figured out how to do both. Yeah, we'll see if they figure out how to do both, because I just don't see it. I mean,
the Swaggy P era. Swaggy P.
Yeah.
Kobe wants to talk about being a businessman. It's funny that he says that, because one avenue the Lakers could have gone is by giving Kobe less money up front now and giving him an ownership percentage so that over the course of time he can be set for life as a Laker, basically. And that would be a good business move. It would also be a good business move in the sense of branding, because the Laker brand would be resurgent. I was looking at 2014, and again, I'm not a Laker guy. I don't have a dog in this fight, but I was looking at 2014 as a year the Lakers would return, but a lot of things had to happen. And the Lakers organization have just combined to pretty much sabotage that from ever happening. The Lakers are not going to be a dynasty for a long time. Kobe is not winning another championship. And that's a bad business move if you're Kobe Bryant, who really has been compared to Michael Jordan more than any player in NBA history.
You know who's kind of the one dude, now that I think about it, that is secretly overjoyed about this? Because I think, in a roundabout way, this helps bolster his job security. And that's Mike D'Antoni.
How so?
Because the way that the cards have been dealt to D'Antoni, you had, like, he's not, everybody was talking about, you know, we need to bring somebody else in, and Phil Jackson is looming out here in the offstage area. But, you know, you lose Dwight Howard, you go through a year where Kobe is not at 100%, you're hamstrung by the moves of the front office. And D'Antoni's got what? He's got 2 years left on his deal?
Don't know, I have to check.
I thought I heard it was either two or three years. Excuse me. I totally see this as being Kobe and D'Antoni for the next 2 years, and that's it. You know what I mean? This is D'Antoni's swan song as Lakers coach, and also Kobe's swan song as the face of the franchise. But they're stuck with each other for the next 2 years just because of the way that these moves have been made. I don't see, you know, what's the point of bringing in a new coach when you don't have the roster to, you know, facilitate winning, when you're dealing with an extremely young roster, when you're dealing with a roster that is not championship caliber, it's not Laker caliber, it's not what the fans are accustomed to. You know, why would you fire D'Antoni and have to pay that man the rest of the money on his deal instead of just suffering through the next 2 years?
3-year contract. So he's done. He's done after next year. He will not be back as a Laker coach. Trust me. So Kobe will have a new coach his last year in the NBA, because there's no way. Unless D'Antoni somehow carries this team of new faces deep into the playoffs his final year, there's no way
he's
coming back.
So D'Antoni's last year is next year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so you're saying you think he's going to get fired before then?
No, I'm saying he'll play out his contract, and once his contract is up after next season, Kobe will have 1 year left.
Yeah, that's all I said. I'm like, they're not going to renew his contract, but in terms of people that were thinking D'Antoni was going to be fired before then, because of the moves that have been made recently, I think that gives him security, at least, you know, for the remainder of his deal.
Well, I mean, the real security he has is that Kobe got hurt. There's no expectations. You know, if Kobe didn't blow out his Achilles, who knows what would happen to D'Antoni, because they would have restructured this team a little differently. But they built this team to compensate for Kobe's production. And they've given D'Antoni a chance to bring in the kind of guys that fit within his system. Has it worked? Yes and no. There's flashes of not greatness, but there's times when the Lakers look decent.
Flashes of above averageness.
Yeah, and then there's games like tonight against Washington where they just no defense at all and let Nene go off for 30. So it's still a work in progress.
Yeah,
and I think with Kobe gone, it helps Mike D'Antoni in that now he has a roster of younger players who are going to buy into the system, and guys who are going to be able to just shoot the three, run and gun. And Kobe Bryant tends to go into business for himself when things aren't going the Lakers' way. He's not going to buy into Mike D'Antoni. He doesn't listen to Mike D'Antoni when he doesn't have to. And Mike D'Antoni doesn't have players in that roster who are like Kobe. He has people who are going to be able to buy in. So that's another positive for his coaching resume and acumen as long as Kobe is out.
Yeah, so we'll keep our eye on that situation. There's never a dull moment in Los Angeles, but there's also never a dull moment in the NFL. And I got two topics I want to talk about in the NFL with the NFL this week, fellas. But I think I want to start off with this quarterback thing, because it's been something that's been kind of piquing my interest over the last couple of weeks. And I know we've discussed young quarterbacks a week or so ago, and the maturation process, and this all the stuff going on with RG3 in Washington is kind of amusing to me. The stuff that's, you know, Cam Newton, all of a sudden he's learned how to play the game the right way. You know, it's like there are things going on with these young quarterbacks that make me kind of scratch my head in terms of the way the media covers them. And there's one dude, I told you when we were having our little pre-production meeting, you know, there's one dude that I think has been given a pass. And, you know, I'm gonna allow you guys, you know, this is a triumvirate. It's a democracy on this show. So I'm gonna allow you, if you feel that I'm getting a little too racial, a little too sensitive right now, you can let me know. But I just want to know, why in the hell is Andrew Luck getting a pass by the national media?
For his play this year? Okay.
To me, Andrew Luck, and I'm not saying that he's a bad quarterback. I think Andrew Luck is a great young quarterback. But the struggles that he has had over the last couple seasons, in terms of, you look at his numbers, you look at statistics, never had a completion rate over 58%. If you look at the interceptions, if you look at some of the silly mistakes that he makes on occasion, Andrew Luck gets a pass that players such as Cam Newton, such as RG3, such as Colin Kaepernick, they don't get the leeway, I think, with the media that Andrew Luck gets. And, you know, I understand he's the golden boy. He came out number one pick, following the footsteps of Peyton Manning. He's been groomed for this situation his whole life. But maybe, you know, again, maybe I'm being too sensitive here, because I love my black quarterbacks, but it just seems to me that Andrew Luck gets a pass where others who are in similar situations don't.
Alfred, do you want to defend Whitey, or should I?
That's a good point. Now, Nate brings up very valid points. I'll say with Andrew Luck, you don't have the circus at the coaching level. I mean, he did have a bit of a circus, but it wasn't a media circus. It was more of a health Chuck Strong thing. So Andrew Luck really got enveloped in the blanket of Chuck Strong. And Chuck Pagano, their head coach, getting cancer, and the Colts team rising above and making the playoffs when they were garbage. Let's face it, they were garbage the year before. And Andrew Luck really helped carry that team to a playoff run. What he was expected to do, I think, is what people are looking at and able to give him a pass, literally a pass. And the thing about Andrew Luck and the Colts is that they started well, so they, you know, he kind of got leeway for that. And his big moments have been in national television. Biggest game of the year, Colts, Broncos, Andrew Luck shine. So that is going to play well with the media. And Andrew Luck has had more comeback victories than any of his young quarterback counterparts in the NFL. I mean, he's the guy that comes back from everything. And that's something that people look at as, wow, look at his mettle, look at how personally tough this man really is. So it's not about stats when it comes to Andrew Luck. It's about what do you see in national television, what do you see in the big moments when he's able to come back, and what do you see what he's done with the team that was absolutely garbage the year before. And I think that's what has really conspired, if you will, if you're Nate, and caused Andrew Luck to be this big star in the eyes of the media.
And just to defend Andrew Luck here just a little bit, one, you got the Reggie Wayne factor. I mean, that's when Indianapolis started to really struggle offensively, was when they lost Reggie Wayne. The other issue that Indianapolis has that most people don't talk about is for a good part of the season, the leading rusher of the Indianapolis Colts, Andrew Luck. That's how bad the run game has been. Even with Trent Richardson, they have not run the ball at all. So if you're a defense, it's a lot easier to defend against Andrew Luck's passing game when you know he can't run the ball at all. So you know, when Bradshaw went down, he was brought in to sort of be, you know, a 1A, 1B option with Donald Brown. So Bradshaw went down, they traded for Richardson thinking he was the answer. He's been terrible. Donald Brown has actually been surprisingly good, but for some reason he doesn't get enough, you know, snaps, minus the last week into Arizona where he struggled. But I think that's part of the reason, too, is that he is forced in situations, I think, now, especially with Wayne out, that he's passing to T.Y. Hilton and a former Raider. So it's like, I don't know. I do what you're saying about the whole race aspect. If you're comparing his struggles to RG3 struggles, well, the big difference is the Colts are 7-4 and the Redskins are, what, 3-8 now. So it's hard to compare the two because, you know, Luck just still has his team in the playoff hunt while RG3 has totally shit the bed here. So Is it just because you feel like he's in the past because compared to who, RG3 or just in general?
Well, I mean, I think that part of it, you know, part of the situation admittedly is black quarterbacks tend to be a little bit more outspoken and demonstrative when things, whether things are going right or whether things are going wrong. You know, it's just kind of the culture. Whereas Andrew Luck is kind of in that Peyton Manning and that Tom Brady buttoned up mold of, you know, I'm going to say the right things at the press conference. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But if you look at just the numbers, you know, between Cam Newton and Cam Newton and Andrew Luck, I think that the flack that Cam caught, especially last season, this is, you know, in his second year compared to Andrew Luck's second year, Cam was having a better year statistically. Granted, you know, the Panthers didn't really do a lot, but you talk about the weapons Andrew Luck had, it's not like Cam was playing with Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, some of these great offensive weapons. But the other thing is, you know, it's not even really about Andrew Luck, because like I said, I like Andrew Luck. I think Andrew Luck is a good quarterback. The bigger problem I have, kind of expanding this thing, is this kind of attitude of these guys have to produce this minute. And I heard a lot of things with the D.C. media down here talking about, you know, we need to bench RG3 and all this other stuff. And this is something, you know, we talked last week with Alfred. Come in and be ready to play. I understand that you're paying a lot of money, you're giving up a high draft pick for these kids. But by the same token, sometimes you just got to let things cook. Tonight for dinner, I had delicious rotisserie chicken. And on the bag of the rotisserie chicken, it said I could put it in the microwave for 7 minutes and it'd be hot and ready. Or I could put it in the oven for 32 minutes and it'd be hot and ready and moist and delicious. I put it in the oven because I wanted it to be moist and delicious. Sometimes you got to let things cook. And I think the attitude of a lot of these owners, a lot of these GMs, and a lot of the fans, frankly, is they expect so much from these dudes. And when winning in the NFL, the cliche I've heard my whole life is winning in the NFL is the hardest thing in the world. Well, if it's the hardest thing in the world, why are we putting all these expectations on these kids when they're only, you know, a year or two into their craft? You know, were you that good at your job 2 years in? Granted, you weren't making that money. Granted, you didn't have that scrutiny. But were you that good at whatever job you had?
Why are they kids? Why are they kids now? It's you know, it's not the hardest thing in the world anymore. I understand the cliche and how it goes, but look at Nick Foles. He statistically had the greatest start of all time, and he's, what, 2 years in? So we've seen 1 year, 2 year quarterbacks. We've seen guys like Joe Flacco. He's been in the NFL for 6 years. He has never, not 1 year, has he missed the playoffs. And so we're seeing this bar being raised with all these quarterbacks.
Quarterback though, he's got a Super Bowl ring, but he is, you know.
But define elite. What do we mean by elite? I know there's an elite quarterback discussion in terms of statistics, and we are a fantasy football driven world when it comes to the NFL. But by my count, Joe Flacco should have beaten Tom Brady 3 times in the playoffs. And this is Tom Brady we're talking about. He's beat him twice, and he's 1 drop touchdown away from beating him 3 times. So Joe Flacco being really, he should be 3-0 against Tom Brady in the playoffs. Is that elite enough for everybody to comment on? Because it looks like he's elite enough to me.
I don't think Flacco's elite. I don't think Stafford's elite. I don't think Ryan's elite. To me, you've got 6 or 7 elite dudes in the NFL. Everybody else is somewhere on that range from decent, good, aight, and then, you know, at the very bottom, Blaine Gabbert, because that's the worst. But, you know, to me, it's like, you know, this kind of thing with quarterbacks, and they only do it with quarterbacks. And this is another thing that pissed me off with the media, you know, in terms of this glorification and demonization of the quarterbacks. It's like you expect so much, but then by the same token, these guys, when they deliver, they're the greatest. And then when they screw up, like I heard some people in Atlanta talking about, we need to try to trade Matt Ryan. And it's like, you are idiots. Where are you going to find a better quarterback, whether it's a free agent market or whether it's in a draft, than Matt Ryan right now for the Atlanta Falcons?
No, and I mean, to Alfred's point, this is where fantasy has been a drawback to sports fans in terms of trying to analyze quarterbacks. I think what Flacco did in the playoffs last year answered any questions about his elite status. I mean, that to go 11 TDs, no interceptions, win the Super Bowl. Like, I don't care what he does this season. You know,
so you consider Eli elite?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do.
You shouldn't even pause for that. Absolutely. No other quarterback has won as many road games in the playoffs as Eli Manning. And you know what I'm talking about? Winning is the hardest thing. Winning road games in the playoffs is the hardest thing. And Eli has won more of them than any quarterback. Of course he's the
And he's got two rings. I mean, just imagine if Flacco did what he did again. Yeah, are they not putting up good numbers this year? Of course not. Are they elite fantasy quarterbacks? Of course not. Are they elite when it comes to winning, and especially winning in the playoffs? Yes, they are.
And listen,
go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, when they had the Manning-Brady, what was it, Manning-Brady 13 or 14, whatever it was?
Yeah.
14, yeah, the other night, and all these discussions, and it's like, does Peyton Manning winning another Super Bowl, does that audit, like, if he's not better than Brady right now, how does winning one more Super Bowl make him better than Brady? If you are, like, I'm of the opinion, I take Manning over Brady any day of the week. But if you are of the opinion that Tom Brady right now is better than Peyton Manning, how does one more Super Bowl make Peyton Manning all of a sudden, oh, he's better than Brady overnight? You know, it's just kind of this weird type of value system that they have when it comes to quarterbacks in terms of who's elite, who's great, who's the greatest. You know what I mean? Who's a bum? Who's a scrub? You know, it's very inconsistent, you know, is the word I would say, Marcus.
Do people really consider Manning to be better than Brady?
I do.
I don't. Maybe in the regular season, but when it comes to the Super Bowl, and the fact that Peyton Manning for years now has had the most playoff losses of all time, I'm sorry, you can't be the greatest anything of all time and have more playoff losses than anybody, especially when you're a quarterback and winning in the NFL is directly tied to you. No, I don't think Peyton Manning is the greatest of all time. I'll take Tom Brady any second to Peyton Manning. We saw that graphic that they had on NBC Football Night America where they showed all the times that Peyton Manning had so many Pro Bowlers. The Peyton Manning Pro Bowl rosters, they were just basically saying Peyton Manning has been on so many talented rosters and failed to bring home the bacon, yet Tom Brady with the David Pattons in the world has been able to win the Super Bowl, and when he got Randy Moss, he broke records. He was a world beater.
See, I think, I'm not saying Peyton Manning is the greatest. To me, that's Joe Montana. Like, can't nobody step to Joe, in my opinion. But Peyton Manning is the best of this generation, in my opinion. But if Brady were to win another Super Bowl, that wouldn't change my opinion. If Manning were to win another Super Bowl and I would happen to be of the opinion that Brady was better, that wouldn't change my opinion, because in the NFL, winning the Super Bowl, that's a team victory. You know, we've seen Trent Dilfer got a ring. Joe Flacco's got a ring. You telling me those dudes are better than Dan Marino?
No, and that's a great point, and it should be deemed as a team effort because football is the ultimate team sport. No one man can carry anybody to a Super Bowl, but when it comes to Super Bowls, for some reason, it's directly tied to the quarterback, and they look at the quarterback, how many rings did you win? No other position is that way but the quarterback.
And there are times when the quarterback is the best player in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. I mean, Trent Dilfer wasn't the best player on that Baltimore Ravens team. The defense carried that Baltimore Ravens team. There hasn't been many teams in the Patriots era that you could point to another player besides Tom Brady as being the best player on that team. That's why he gets the credit that he does. So you're saying even another Brady ring wouldn't sway you from your Manning thought?
No, because to me, I'm not going to disrespect Tom Brady. He is one of the four or five greatest quarterbacks to ever step on a football field. But to me, the fact that Peyton Manning puts up these numbers in Indy and in Denver, that means something to me. The fact that
in the regular season,
in the regular season,
Tom Brady having Bill Belichick and that defense for all these years, to me, that is like you can't separate one from the other.
Have we ever looked at a Patriots defense and thought, wow, what a, like, we put them up there with the 85 Bears or the Ravens? They're like the no-name defense. They have Teddy Bruschi, they have the role players.
They have freaking Troy Brown out there at one point.
Yeah, Rodney Harrison.
Yeah!
They had Troy Brown out there for one of the Super Bowl teams. They're not, they've never been known for a good defense. But, come on, okay. If you're just comparing talent from this year's team, if you compare what Peyton Manning is working with in Denver compared to what Tom Brady's working with in New England, your theory.
No question. Brady's got a better offensive talent.
Manning. I was going to say.
Okay.
Yeah. I was about to hang up this conversation.
No,
all right.
Manning, no question. Because, you know, you talk about Decker and Demarius, Welker, all those boys, Sean Moreno. No question Peyton Manning has the better offensive talent. My thing is, in terms of a quarterback, to me, I think you could take Peyton Manning and put him on the Jaguars, and the Jaguars will have a winning record. Whereas I'm not so sure that Tom Brady could be as great as he is outside of that Bill Belichick offense.
How can you say that? Now, okay, I can see that with the system quarterback argument, especially after what Matt Castle did. But what Peyton Manning does, Peyton Manning's brand is a regular season brand. It's not like it's a fluke that Peyton Manning always flames out in the playoffs. He's not good in cold weather when you're not going to be able to sling the ball around as much. You saw that this past Sunday. And he's not that good when it comes to defenses who are going to be able to key in on that fast approach when they're elite defenses and have time to prepare for Peyton Manning. He's just not the same guy, especially in these big moments. We see this all the time with Peyton Manning, and it's perfectly explainable. People try to point fingers at the defense and blah, 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 Peyton Manning isn't Wes Welker. Yeah, okay, that's all well and good. But there's a reason he keeps losing time after time after time, one and done in these playoffs. It's because that system is a regular season system that's very hard to prepare for a week-to-week basis when he's playing the Jacksonville Jaguars of the world. But when he runs into the Steelers, when he runs into those elite teams, it's very hard for Peyton Manning to win the playoffs.
I agree with that to a certain extent. But what I'm saying is, in terms of playing the position, other than Joe Montana, I can't say, honestly, in my lifetime, that I've seen somebody play that position and be that field general that everybody talks about that they want on their team more capably than Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Okay, Peyton Manning's a great field general.
He's not my favorite quarterback. Like, Michael Vick is my favorite quarterback. Like, Michael Vick, Randall Cunningham, I'm quarterbacks all day, every day. Like, to me, if I had a Hall of Fame, it would be like the first wing of the Hall of Fame would be like Warren Moon, Rodney Pete, Seneca Wallace.
Your Mount Rushmore would be made out of like granite rock,
right?
Like
just straight up, just black opal, just the darkest material we can find for my quarterbacks. But in terms of the mechanics of the game and playing that quarterback position, I'm not taking anything away from Tom Brady. I hate the Patriots, but I respect Tom Brady. I just think that mechanically and in terms of running an offense, running any offense, Peyton Manning, like if you got one game to win, that hypothetical situation everybody always says, one game for your life on the line. I'm picking Peyton Manning to be the quarterback of my team.
Even after seeing him blow a 24-point first-half lead, you're picking Peyton Manning with one game to win? I think I'm picking Tom Brady after seeing what he did.
I didn't say one game in the playoffs. You got nothing to add to that, Marcus?
I'm just baffled that all these years you've seen Peyton in the playoffs, you still are riding for Peyton Manning. I mean, has he not broken your heart enough by now?
And then let's look at Peyton Manning and the trail, you know, the journey he's going to have to get to another Super Bowl. There are, what, two dumb teams in the AFC? No, I didn't.
Did you learn nothing from last week?
We're not talking about the Chiefs yet. But speaking of the Chiefs, he might have to go to Arrowhead Stadium. Okay, we've got the Colts out of the AFC South. If Peyton Manning doesn't win his division, his best bet is being a 5 seed and playing the Colts in the playoffs. Otherwise, if he has home field advantage, he's going to have to be in Denver in that cold weather, or he's going to have to go through Arrowhead, or he's going to have to go to Gillette Stadium. And he's going to be in cold weather for not only the playoffs, but the Super Bowl. Is Peyton Manning going to be able to string together that many wins in cold weather? I think not.
You never know. You never know.
Yeah, that's not happening. That is not happening. I mean, he you're right. He's going to – ideally, Denver gets Indianapolis somehow in their first game. And after that, I mean, you're getting cold either way you go. I mean, if you're home.
I mean, that's the other thing, though. The AFC, there's no real world beaters out there.
True, but look at the teams.
I mean, do you believe in KC? Do you believe, like, anybody can be beat in the AFC this year? There's no juggernaut.
Including the Denver Broncos. Did you believe in the Baltimore Ravens at the time they beat the Denver Broncos? They were, a 9-point favorite in that game?
Actually, I thought the Ravens had a shot because, of course, they had Jacoby Jones. And as we all know from listening to the Kings of Sport.
Greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time. The GOAT. Okay? this is a great conversation. Like, had I known we were going to, like, get this deep with it, we would have just let off with this. Be like, sorry, Kobe, you have to show this week.
You know what I want? You know what I want in the playoffs, by the way? I want your new Denver Broncos going against Alfred Cincinnati Bengals. Someone has to win.
Oh, yeah. Then I'll be torn. I like Peyton Manning, but, you know, black coach. I got to.
There you go. And the Bengals are built for cold weather, man. They would go into Mile High Stadium. I don't know. They would stop them.
And then then the Bengals are also relying on another young quarterback with Andy Dalton. So
you mentioned Andrew Luck. People shit on Andy Dalton. So it's hard to say it's race because people, they don't give Andy Dalton any slack at all. So
yeah, maybe
he's just a ginger.
Maybe it's just Andrew Luck. Maybe just people just love Andrew Luck.
Maybe.
I'm telling you though, you know who I would like to see in the playoffs before we wrap this segment up with Marcus's Hockey Minute. I would love to see Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers come out of the NFC and take on the Denver Broncos. That would be my ideal Super Bowl matchup.
Could happen.
That would not be a sexy Super Bowl matchup, by the way.
No, it wouldn't. But that's the other thing. Like, I had this secret, not so secret anymore because I just said it on the podcast to everybody out there. I got this. Like, I'm waiting for the black quarterback to you know, Doug Williams, you know, he got his, but that was a hot minute ago. I'm waiting for the black quarterback to come out and win a Super Bowl so they can put this tired argument that a mobile quarterback can't win a Super Bowl. They can put that to bed.
Would they, though? Because this would be more the exception than the rule. It would take a couple black quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl for that to happen.
I think of the current crop of quarterbacks, I think Kaepernick, well, I don't know. I'm torn about Kaepernick now.
I mean, if Russell Wilson or Cam Newton, you know, led their team to the Super Bowl and they ended up winning, you know, it's like you kind of have to start reevaluating that argument. Kaepernick got the Niners to the Super Bowl last year. They just didn't win.
I don't know if people are still having that discussion, though, about black quarterbacks.
I'm not saying just necessarily black quarterback. I'm saying the
mobile
argument. Right, the argument that a quarterback that is a pass and a running quarterback are running through, that they can't get it done, that you have to be this prototypical pocket quarterback to win a Super Bowl. In the mold of an Andrew Luck, since we hating on Andrew Luck today.
I mean, Andrew Luck's also a quote-unquote mobile quarterback.
Yeah, and you know what? Steve Young was a mobile quarterback, and I know he was very accurate in passing, and he played in that West Coast system, but the guy had wheels. So I think it might be a bit of a nod to, you know, cough, cough, black quarterback, but not really saying black quarterback.
Steve Young is an honorary black quarterback. He's in my Hall of Fame.
He is.
In that dark, deep opal.
No, he can't be dark, deep opal. He's got to be like the. He's got to be the light.
He's a Mormon, man. There's nothing dark about that.
he did have a little bit of an afro back in the day, though. You look at Steve Young. He took that helmet off. He had a little bit of an afro with it.
He had the good hair. He had good curls, man.
he had that Marcus Vandenberg hair. Them good curves. Steve Young was just light skinned. That's what it was. He was just light skinned. And speaking of team light skinned, we gonna go to our resident member, Team Light Skin, to close out the A block with the Hockey Minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to ask a Hockey Negro with Marcus Vandenberg.
I'm back.
Woo!
Big news out of the hockey world last night. Sad news for people who are a fan of TSN in Canada. Starting in 2014, they will be losing their NHL rights to Rogers Sportsnet. This is a big deal for our folks in Canada. It is a 12-year deal worth just under $5 billion in U.S. dollars. And, I mean, it's pretty much the end of a tradition. This would be like if – I guess sort of like when ABC lost Monday Night Football, even though it went to ESPN. But something of that magnitude where you've associated – a network with the sport. You know, TSN has been associated with hockey for years and years. Hockey Night in Canada is a huge ratings attraction up north. So this is a big deal, and I'm sure a lot of those people who worked at TSN will be brought over to Rogers Sportsnet to do the hockey. But, you know, this is interesting. It doesn't impact us down here in the States because we still get as little hockey as possible since it's not on ESPN, but
NBC Sportsnet stay try to pump hockey up, though. Every night I turn
Wednesday night rivalries.
Yeah. Like, this ain't no damn rivalry. the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning. This ain't a rivalry. Yeah. I don't even know if the Columbus Blue Jackets still exist.
They do. They do.
Okay, cool. I just threw them out there because I know the Atlanta team is null and void.
Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the hockey minute.
It's been sorry.
It's been slow in hockey. This is sort of that part of the season where you start to check out until, well, we have the Olympics this year, so after the Olympics, it'll pick up. But between now and February, it's, you know, it is what it is.
Interesting thing, like, do you think that, I mean, obviously you ain't in talks with TSN right now, Marcus, but, like, do you think that they bring that whole Hockey Night crew over to Rogers, or do you think they'll keep that as, a TSN property even without the hockey package?
I did see something that TSN wasn't willing to give up the theme song for Hockey Night in Canada. So that's one aspect of the deal. It would make sense, especially I don't know enough about Sportsnet to know who they have currently to do hockey coverage, if they have anyone. If they wanted to make a smooth transition and keep Canadians happy, I would say just bring everyone over from TSN. But you know, whenever you have a bitter network and people under contract, things get messy. So it wouldn't surprise me if they went into a whole different direction with the new staff.
That reminds me of like the saddest day in NBA history in my youth.
When CBS signed off?
No, when NBC lost the NBA on NBC.
Man. No more John Tesh?
I couldn't hear the John Tesh round ball rock no more.
Oh. Yes.
That was my jam right there. Like, that's the best song. I have never bought a John Tesh record. But that is the best. Like, I downloaded that on iTunes. That is the best John Tesh song ever. That's in my top 10 right now. Still. I'll be going to playground games. Just play that. Yeah, y'all don't know about this, kids. Y'all don't know about this. It's real basketball. Like Uncle Drew out there. But that was Marcus' Hockey Minute, Ask a Hockey Negro. And that was a great segment one, fellas. Great segment one. But, you know, any other show, they would have be the show right there. But we got much more for you. We got the Ringside Rap coming up next with our discussion about Survivor Series. We're going to talk about Raw for Monday night. We're going to talk about the continuing evolution of one Xavier Woods. And then, stick around, segment four. Yeah, y'all ain't ready for this. Y'all ain't safe in this zoo. This zoo is not safe for you. So stick and stay. So we got more Kings of Sport right after this.
Don't try to antagonize me, because you know what? It's not safe for you in this zoo.
Got an opinion you want to share with the Kings? Well, have your say in one of three different ways. Visit Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Email us at TheKingsOfSport@gmail.com and hit us up at CosPod on Twitter. And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, Marcus, Nasty, and Mace. And a quick fantasy football update. I have a chance, in essence, to clinch a bye week with a win. It's a little hairier than that, but in the grand scheme of things, if I win, I'm in. And if I get a bye week, I'm going to tell my players to just relax in the sauna, rest their feet, don't go out and get arrested, because you got a big game the week after. And while they're relaxing, I will suggest that they read an audiobook. And the best source for that is Audible.com. Audible.com is a premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers,
business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, let me read some of these titles for you. We've got The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, The Witness by Nora Roberts, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, A History of Nazi Germany by William L. Shire, and, of course, my personal favorite, Wrestling with the Devil, the Lex Luger story. Go get that! And you know what? The special bonus Audible.com book I have will be revealed very shortly. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport for your free audiobook. Now, as I was saying, the special book that Nasty recommends is Lone Survival, the eyewitness account of Operation Red Wing and the Lost Heroes of SEAL Team 10 by Marcus Luttrell and Patrick Robinson, narrated by Kevin Collins. And I talk about The Lone Survivor because Survivor Series was this past weekend on WWE pay-per-view, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was a terrible pay-per-view. Bad build-up, bad execution. It was up against Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, which people were going to watch anyway and turn out to be a great game. It was up against the AMAs, and that series may have to be canceled sooner or later. I just thought the main event with The Big Show and Randy Orton and the fans not caring and them chanting Daniel Bryan at the finish really sealed their fate. And I just thought it was an all-around below mediocre pay-per-view, especially given the fact that it was such a poor build and had such little to live up to, Marcus.
I agree. And the good thing about this pay-per-view is you knew going in that it was going to be bad. So if you paid money for this pay-per-view and you weren't happy, that's on you, because everyone saw this coming. You shouldn't be surprised that you were disappointed at the entire show. And the best part of the show was actually the final 2 minutes when John Cena came in the ring after Randy Orton's victory and hinted at a title-for-title match, which was announced on Raw the following night.
They said both titles were going to be up for grabs, but have they officially said it's a quote-unquote unification match yet?
No, they have not. And that'll give them the out, because I really do think that this is going to be a trolling finish. I don't think fans should pay their money to see this pay-per-view in TLC if they only want to see a unification, because this is an easy situation where John Cena and Randy Orton can both pull down championships. I really see the finish being John Cena becomes the WWE champion, Randy Orton becomes it's a world chain. You could say you have a title switch, and at the same time, the titles are still apart. And I do see unification eventually happening, but that's going to be at WrestleMania. It's not going to be at TLC in December. No, no way. Now, as far as Survivor Series, I thought it was a bad pay-per-view, and it's been bad over the years because WWE hasn't been true to the Survivor Series brand. You look at the Royal Rumble, and months in advance, they've got like a top five list of guys who they know they want to win the Royal Rumble because they booked WrestleMania backwards. You look at WrestleMania, they've got an idea of what dream match they want at WrestleMania 6 months in advance. You look at SummerSlam, it's the WrestleMania of the summer. They've got an idea who's going to be in the main event at that show. But Survivor Series, it seems to just sneak up on them. They say, oh, let's just throw a bunch of guys in an elimination match and see what happens. No. You have to really build a conflict. And you saw The Rock was at Survivor Series last year, and it's still disappointed because WWE isn't true to the group gang warfare that is Survivor Series. I thought this was going to be the year with the Wyatts, with the diversion between the WWE authority and the WWE babyfaces. I thought that could have been a great Survivor Series program, but still they just kind of hemmed and hawed, and when the rubber met the road, they said, okay, fine, we'll throw good guys versus bad guys. And that just doesn't sell if it's a Survivor Series. So I really do see this pay-per-view being canceled. And, I mean, basically, Nate, if Survivor Series is canceled, would you care?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, it would hurt to lose my 7-on-7 traditional Divas Survivor Series match.
Oh, of course.
I mean, that would be hurtful to my heart. But, I mean, I'm somebody, and people think, you know, because I'm a fan of TNA that I don't like the WWE, and that's not the case at all. You know, I'm a fan of professional wrestling. And when the WWE is good, you know, I give them their props, I give them their due, and I think it's good for business to steal one of Triple H's phrases. But as someone who loved the concept of the Survivor Series back in the day, when you could have these unique teams that were just kind of thrown together, like, where else are you going to see Tatanka and Coco Beware and Strikeforce team up for no reason? You know, I don't even know if that was a real team or not, but it could have been. And that was the excitement of the Survivor Series back in the day. And now, you know, they'll give us one or maybe two matches that still have that format. But for the most part, it's indistinguishable from, you know, any other pay-per-view. You know, Survivor Series might as well have been, you know, Hell in a Cell without the cells, or it might as well have been Payback or any of the other shows that we've seen. And I think that's another part that diminishes Survivor Series, Alfred, is that we've got a lot of pay-per-views. You know, we had that one stretch where we had three shows in, what, 6 weeks? And then we got TLC coming up 3 weeks from now. So it's like you got a bunch of shows concentrated in this late part of the year that none of them really seem important.
Yeah, and the big highlight, Marcus was talking about the unification storyline, which was definitely the takeaway from the Survivor Series, especially because it's really the only thing the fans reacted to, and they went off the air with that. But another big storyline with Survivor Series was Roman Reigns and the ascension of Roman Reigns, as he pretty much took out the entire babyface roster en route to a win for the Shield and for the heel team. So with me, I'm so jaded that I see another guy being pegged by the WWE as the next great superstar. And I've seen the story with Daniel Bryan. I've seen it with Jack Swagger and Sheamus. And I've seen it with so many guys. Marcus, do you think that Roman Reigns could possibly be the guy to break through that mold and finally ceiling of baby faces that go so close and don't end up being something? Do you think that could be Roman Reigns?
I think it can be if he's sticking with this current gimmick where he's not talking. I mean, the problem with, well, Bryan is doesn't fit that mold of big guys, so we can stretch him off the list. You mentioned Sheamus, who had a push, but you know, Sheamus was great as a heel, but when he became a babyface, he became, you know, a hokey John Cena type, and no one wanted that. It's going to be hard for him to make Roman Reigns a John Cena light, or a Samoan John Cena, I hope, please. So I think this is why I have faith in Roman breaking through, because if he just sticks with what he's doing and just using his sheer power and just, you know, destroying guys, I think he can do it. You know, we all know that the company tends to favor these bigger guys, and this is why, you know, when Punk had his title run, it was so remarkable, because, you know, it's rare that we see a guy like Punk even win the title, let alone hold it for over a year. So I'm hoping that Roman Reigns gets that push, whether he's a babyface or a heel. It doesn't matter to me. But I have faith. I also had faith in fucking what's-his-face last week, too. So who knows? Xavier Woods. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, Marcus, because we were talking about the glass ceiling, and now we're talking about Xavier Woods, and he is not even a table, ladder, and a chair away from touching that glass ceiling in the WWE. Marcus did say he would give him another week, and that's yeoman's type patience with the WWE who gave us prime time. He said he'd give him another week, but to Marcus's credit, I think WWE, if you're going to give him time, it's more than a week to where this type of thing is going to pay off if it's an elaborate work. But we've had another week, and it's another week of shucking, another week of jiving. I know, Nate, you've got some strong feelings on this, so why don't you tell me what you think about week two of Xavier Woods?
Well, there's a couple things, and this week in the Black WWE. But, you know, first thing, I think I was the one that called Big E was going to end up transitioning to the happy face Negro mold sooner rather than later. And in that World's Strongest Tag Team, which I thought was pretty cool with him and Mark Henry, I saw a lot of smiles from that brother. I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
I mean, well, if he's gonna be a babyface, you can't scowl. I mean, come on. There's a.
But you can be a babyface and be a badass. You know what I mean? You don't have to come out there glad handing the fans and this and that. Stone Cold Steve Austin never smiled. You know, and
that's what I was about to say.
With the fans.
It's a lot harder for black people to get over as babyfaces when they're scowling.
But getting back to Xavier Woods, though, like to me, they had him. Of course, you know, for those that didn't see it, they brought him out to the Brodus Clay entrance with the Funkadactyls and everything, dancing and shucking and jiving and looking like Rockwell, like I mentioned last week. And I don't even really have a problem with them having Xavier Woods steal a gimmick. It's just, why that gimmick? You know, to me, it'd be more appropriate if, and follow me here, fellas. If I'm not incorrect, Alfred, isn't Xavier Woods, does he have his PhD or is he working on his PhD?
No, he's pursuing it. He's pursuing it right now.
So he's pursuing his PhD. And as we all know, Vince McMahon and the writers in the WWE creative, they have a propensity for portraying African-American workers as thugs. So Xavier Woods, who was going after his PhD and can be portrayed as a thug, can be the new Doctor of Thugonomics.
The literal Doctor of Thugonomics.
That way you get the best of both worlds. Just have a very educated ghetto person dancing to the ring every week.
At this point, I would take it as long as they admit that he's a doctor.
You'd be like Damian Sandow with a jerry curl.
Well, going back to his gimmick, is the gimmick that he's trying to find his gimmick? Is he going to go around and be partnered with other stables until he finds the right gimmick for him? Because it felt like R-Truth introduced him out, but it felt like, okay, well, this week he was going to be Brodus Clay, and then next week he's going to be partnering with Primetime. I don't know, it just feels like they're bouncing him around as part of this bigger story of God knows what.
You remember when they did that gimmick with Charlie Haas where he was just imitating everybody?
Yes.
It's similar to that, whereas, you know, we don't know what this dude is going to be, so we'll just kind of work some things out and figure out who he is and stick him. Like, I have a feeling he's going to do the Primetime Players gimmick, like you mentioned, Mark, because I could easily see him, you know, maybe he'll be dancing with Fandango and Summer Rae for 1 week, but, you know, it's a disservice to the dude because, you know, we all know he can work in the ring. I haven't heard much of his promos. I don't watch a lot of NXT. But, you know, he can put a couple sentences together. And it's just like, I don't think they're really giving him the best opportunity to succeed.
Well, I mean, if that's going to be his gimmick, then I will go back to giving them time to figure out what the end game is, you know.
Until 2 weeks from now when he comes out, yo, 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 it's crime time.
No, but Alpha mentioned last week about having a gimmick where he basically, you know, turns his back on these guys, R-Truth and et cetera. But you would think this is the route they could be going because he's sort of bouncing around in these stereotypical roles within the company.
You know, I mean, maybe that would be great, but I don't have that much faith, Marcus. I have faith in TNA, so you know I have a lot of faith, but I don't have any faith that this is leading to some grand angle where, you know, we Xavier Woods kind of gets disgusted with the buffoonery.
Well, I mean,
yeah, go ahead. I'm with you, Nate. I'm definitely with Nate in that when I see Xavier Woods and he's constantly out there with R-Truth, and I think they're going to keep those two together no matter what Xavier Woods does. Even if he is bouncing around to different stables, he will be with R-Truth. And I would think, as an outsider, yeah, sure, he's going to turn on R-Truth one day, but I'm just too jaded in what I've seen from the WWE over the years, and I just think this is the role they have for him. Hey, he's a guy, he's upbeat, he's charismatic, he can go in there and fill time for the WWE audience and dance around and get them hyped before the next match, and I just don't see WWE with that staff being able to have the wherewithal to say, okay, we're going to create this angry black character who's educated and who's sick of the African-Americans who are buffoons. I just don't see WWE being that self-aware.
You don't think David Otunga gave him just said, hey, how about you do this? I didn't have nothing else to do. Let me help you guys out in creative since you guys aren't going to put me on television.
Yeah. Yeah, and David Otunga is a good example of somebody who they have taken advantage of his background, and they have been able to tell the story of, hey, this guy's a Harvard-educated lawyer, and we're going to run with that. And the fact that Xavier Woods is so far away from what he really is tells me that maybe there's a little chance that they're just leading us on a little bit, and eventually he's going to turn on R-Truth. But having said that, when's the last time you really saw David Otunga do anything meaningful? The guy was on Muscle and Fitness, which is a very mainstream magazine. But guess what? We haven't seen him on TV to promote that. When Vince McMahon was on Muscle and Fitness, that became part of a WrestleMania storyline. But David Otunga, he just popped up, and it was kind of like a moment where you say, oh, yeah, that's right. David Otunga is still with the WWE.
Last time I thought about David Otunga was when he was having that beef with Wale on Twitter.
He's a terrible wrestler. But he has a job for life because he is a great spokesman for the company. You know, he's great at
going. Speaks so well.
He's so well spoken. He speaks so well.
He enunciates.
But
so eloquent.
You know, whenever there's a Be a Star event or anything of that like, you know, they like having that celebrity attachment, I think, as well with Jennifer Hudson. Even though she's never been brought up on WWE TV, I'm sure David Otunga is more well-known by the general public than, you know, maybe Titus O'Neil or someone like that. So,
not after this week.
We have to discuss that segment.
All right, what you're talking about is Titus O'Neil, the other resident black superstar, was part of a segment with Michael Strahan, NFL great and TV personality, and The Miz. And basically, I'll just give my general thoughts of that. I thought that the segment was very awkward to watch. Titus O'Neil did a good job holding it together when he could. But what I didn't like about the segment was that at the end of it, you got Miz, who has just turned heel, needs to make an impression as a heel. He gets hip-tossed. And he's a bad guy, but all of a sudden, when it's over, Michael Strahan, everybody, and they're shaking hands, and they're hugging each other. I really thought it was a terrible segment, all in all. Marcus, did you like it?
It's one of the worst segments I've seen in Raw ever. Ever. It felt like a bad stage play, as opposed to...
Tyler Perry presents Monday Night Raw.
might as well have been.
It does the job.
It was awful. And it wasn't Strahan's fault. You know, I'm sure he didn't sign up for that. But when you're asked to guest host Raw and you show up to building that day and this is what they give you, you sort of have to go off it. So he was fine throughout the night. But just some of the stuff they put him in, the segment with the Wyatts in the back didn't make much sense. I felt bad for him. You know, I hope he, you know, I'm sure as a fan – granted, if I was in his shoes, I would get a throw out of being a guest host in Raw, regardless of what they had me doing. So I'm sure he had a blast, but the final product was not impressive.
Yeah, you know, and again, even in that segment, I think Strahan, Titus, and Miz, you know, they played the roles well for what was written for them. It's just what was written for them was crap.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the face heel dynamic. It's like, first of all, you got Titus kind of playing this impersonation of Michael Strahan. It's like, last time we saw Titus O'Neil, him and Darren Young were baby faces. And now he's aligning himself with The Miz, who last time we saw him, he was a heel. And then, you know, like you said, Alfred, by the end of the segment, they're all dancing and doing the millions of dollars thing together right after Michael Strahan just finished embarrassing him in front of millions of people. And it's like, nothing in that segment had any consequence. I've hated the guest host concept since they started it. You know, there's only been like a handful of guest hosts that I thought were really cool and added to the program. But this was kind of like, yeah, Bob Barker being you know, chief among them. But this was kind of like, if you aren't taking your own storyline seriously, then why should you expect me as a viewer to take you seriously?
Exactly. And we, as people who observe wrestling, we don't think the product is real. But like anything else, people who watch Grey's Anatomy, people who watch Glee, for God's sake, we want to suspend our disbelief and at least enjoy the product from that standpoint. And if you're pretty much turning around and pulling back the curtain saying, "Ha, I got you, it's not real," well, then it's harder to enjoy the product for what it is. But, you know, you can't say anything about Michael Strahan. Not only does everybody think I look like Michael Strahan, white people love Michael Strahan. But in the next segment, we get to somebody who hates white people, more Kings of Sport.
It's not safe for you in this zoo.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, sports talk for our generation.
Hope of the world is in our generation. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Take a lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's fill the world with love and get rid of all the hate. Our elders taught us one thing. Just look what happened to the Indian and the brother.
year 1621, the Pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians. Elder William Brewster said a prayer that went something like this. We thank God for our homes and our food, and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world with freedom and justice. Amen.
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport, the show whose ratings are higher than a Seattle Seahawks defensive back. It is Nate, joined as always by Marcus and Alfred, and we're about to close up shop for this Thanksgiving edition of the show. But before we do, we want to send a big shout out to our friends at Place to Be Nation. Kings of Sport is powered by PlaceToBeNation.com. Go there for all the latest news and information in the world of sports, music, gaming, movies, comic books, and anything else in the world of pop culture. Place to Be Nation is your one-stop spot for the best in pop culture. And when we talk about pop culture in segment four on this show, we've had a lot of great people that we've talked about over the past couple of episodes. Rob Ford, Lamar Odom, Otis Nixon, the list goes on and on. But one of the most entertaining and enlightening and sometimes damn near confusing people that we've had to talk about is one brother Kanye West, and Yeezy was at it again on Tuesday, making the rounds, doing some press, and things got a little heated, didn't they, Marcus?
They did. You mentioned Kanye making the rounds. He was in New York. He did the Breakfast Club when Power 105 won, and it's a well-known morning show. It's syndicated across the East Coast, and DJ Envy, Angela Yee, and Charlamagne the God, who has notoriously, he's been critical of Kanye in the past, and he pulled no punches today when Kanye was in studio, going straight after Kanye as soon as the interview started, and it was a 40-minute long interview, and Charlamagne was pretty blunt towards Kanye. He let him know that he thought the album sucked, Yeezus. He called him out on some of his contradictions, because Kanye went on a few of his Kanye rants there, and Charlamagne was right there just to let him know, what Kanye was saying didn't make any sense, which eventually led to a Kanye meltdown on another show when he went to, I believe he visited Sway after the Power 105 interview. Yeah. We'll get to that a little later, but I know, Nate, you had some favorite Kanye-isms from the Breakfast Club interview.
Yeah, this is one of the times where I wish this podcast was an actual radio show, because I'd had all the clips put in the bank and we could just go through them one by one. But just to give you guys a sampling of where Brother West's head was at Tuesday morning, he said, "I'm a visionary. I'm like Walt Disney, Steve Jobs, Michelangelo, and David Stern." I don't know where David Stern fits into all this, but okay, it is what it is, Kanye. Another one that really caught my attention and I found funny was, he was like, "I'm ahead of my time. I've always been 10 years ahead of my time. And regardless of whether it's music or talking about George Bush, and you might see a smile on my face right now, and that's a 2013 smile, but behind it is a 2023 smile." And this is the level of discussion that Kanye engaged in with the Breakfast Club. And like I said, man, Kanye is somebody that, whether you love him or you hate him, you're always going to listen to him, because he is one of the most fascinating people in pop culture right now. I'm not a psychiatrist. We got a friend that listens to the show, Brother Henry down in South Carolina, who is. And I think Brother Henry would love to have, 30 minutes or an hour just to sit down with Kanye and get inside that head of his. But the funny thing about the Breakfast Club is, like most programs, we're no strangers to this. We've got a provocateur on the panel. That's a nice way of putting it. But
an asshole.
Yeah. we got Brother Alfred. The Breakfast Club has Charlamagne the God, and he's the guy that's gonna troll the guests. He's gonna say the things that he knows will get a reaction. And again, Alfred is no stranger to that. So, Alfred, what did you think of the interview and how Kanye handled himself this morning?
Well, to be honest, he handled himself very well, surprisingly well, with Charlamagne the God, who has been really, I think everybody says one of the. I think he's been the biggest and most high-profile critic of Kanye West in terms of somebody who's constantly going after him. He gets a lot of run on YouTube and Twitter and social media. He's really made a name of himself for himself going after Kanye West. And he handled himself very well. And it's like Kanye West knew what to expect, so he knew to be on his best behavior to show everybody that he's very mature and he knows how to handle his critics. But then when he went on Sway, he absolutely exploded. I'm assuming that this just kind of brewed within Kanye West and that he heard so many things from Charlamagne the God and Kanye Kardashian. He took so many shots at him that he was able to just downplay that eventually just brewed and Kanye misdirected his anger at Sway. That's what it seemed like to me being in this New York, you know, shark tank that you get in when you're doing the media circuit. And Kanye West, what really sparked that debate was Kanye West's failure in the fashion world. Which is very apropos because Kanye West really is the angry black man. He's somebody who one minute he's happy, he's your best friend, like with Sway. The next minute he's biting your head off. The next minute he loves you. Kanye West is the angry black man. And they teach you that in the rap world, of course you can be the angry black man. NWA, Public Enemy, Kanye West, you can be an angry black man. You can be an angry white man like Eminem. If you're angry, it works with hip-hop. But if you try to foray into the fashion world, which is posh and high society and high class, one second he's best friends with Louis Vuitton, the next second he's cussing him out on the internet, you cannot be that type of personality. And I think that's what led to his downfall in fashion. And that's the type of personality, that up and down type dealing that Kanye West has, that really led to his meltdown with Sway.
Yeah, it was an epic meltdown. You go find, the best part is whoever recorded the meltdown portion of the interview was literally a guy who hit record on his radio to capture the audio from his car. and basically, you know, he got tired of Sway's, you know, or questions about needing corporate support for his fashion aspirations, and he said, "You ain't got the answers, man. You ain't got the answers." And you know, it's a 3-minute rant, and I didn't. It's a 3-minute meltdown because I think Charlamagne delivered the body blows earlier in the day, and
exactly,
he was poking the bear. He managed to escape the interview without him snapping, and Sway just happened to walk into, a guy who is already probably at level 9 in terms of being upset. And, you know, any negative question was going to set Kanye off at that point. And Sway just happened to ask the right question. And we had a Kanye meltdown.
Yeah, the funny part to me was, you know, with Sway, when Kanye brought up Sway's failed clothing line. It's like, come on, dog. You're supposed to be hard, but you beefing over fashion.
Yeah. By the way, the best part was they eventually did, you know, apologize and whatnot. And Kanye said, this is exactly what happened at the French Revolution. I'm sure there are some arguments with Harriet Tubman and other people talking about, let's go this way, let's go that way.
That's what you got to hold about Kanye. He's always got his overplayed analogies ready in his back pocket. So he's going to compare himself to Jesus or Harriet Tubman or Jacques Cousteau or whatever. I don't know where he gets them from.
To me, Kanye seems like the guy that, you know, just finished his first semester of college. And he's got just enough knowledge to sound like he knows what he's talking about, but it's like the analogies don't quite fit. Like, he'd be talking to Kanye about just, you know, sneakers. And he'd be like, well, you know, Nike, they trying to circumvent me like the time Magellan was in the 89th parallel. They don't understand. I'm like Vasco da Gama. I'm out here on the ocean, and they like some sharks, but then the Kraken came up and took my boat down, and the Kraken is corporate America. But I don't have a problem with corporate America. I just got a problem with the people in corporate America. It's like, what is you talking about, man? And that's one of the things he said on the Breakfast Club. He's like, after all the stuff he said about Nike in terms of, you know, the stuff with the Air Yeezys, and he's like, I don't have a problem with Nike. I just got a problem with the people at Nike.
Yeah, that's a problem with Nike then. I mean,
that's like Alfred saying, I don't have a problem with the WWE. I just got a problem with the people that work for the WWE.
That's exactly what it's like. And
that's,
you know,
how you end up outside of the party looking in.
That's exactly. Don't do what I did, kids. But Kanye West, it's a big cop out, to be honest. And I think he was very honest. I think he did a good job at not pulling any punches, and he was right there able to answer every question they had. But that was one of the BS lines of the night, is that he is a walking contradiction. Let's just face it. Yeezus was a passion project of his that was designed to exploit white America, exploit corporate America for, you know, bringing on this new slavery of America and his African-American counterparts, in that he was just a hamster on the wheel. He's just a helpless slave. But in the grand scheme of things, Kanye West knows power brokers in the world of fashion, in the world of Nike, in these worlds where he's able to become part of corporate America and integrate himself. And on the same album, rap about the fact that, yes, I've got the Red Octobers coming out. And so, yes, he is a walking contradiction. It's just that was an element where he was not able to defend himself.
And the thing is, like, he makes sense sometimes. And, you know, he's got valid points in terms of, you know, the that you can only reach a certain level. And there's, you know, kind of a cliquishness within the fashion world. But by the same token, he also wants to be related to and respected by regular folks. And these are problems that we cannot readily identify with. I don't know about you, Marcus, but getting the shoe out in October is not my primary concern.
Not mine either. Buying shoes in October is not my concern either. That's just not something that's
my radar. He was like, ask me when the Red Octobers is coming out. Ask me. And they was like, well, Kanye, when are the Red Octobers coming out? Nike said they don't know. They don't know. This is what I got to deal with. I'm like, you talking with Nike, man. You at the meetings with Nike. You probably eat some good catered food. Got the good water sitting next to Phil Knight. I would like to handle those problems. I would like to handle those problems of going to sleep every night next to Kim Kardashian and have people call you Kanye Kardashian. I could use those problems in my life.
I would want those problems.
You would not?
Married to that family? Hell no, I wouldn't want those problems.
Maybe you can get like a bunkhouse or like a cabin or an outhouse just down the street from the Kardashian home and not have to deal with the family.
I want no parts of that family.
Not even the back side.
Bruce Jenner?
Nope. None of it.
He let you wear his medals and stuff. I let you wear my medals, Marcus.
Nope. And that's how Charlamagne started the interview, calling him Kanye Kardashian. I mean, but I mean that's on Kanye. Like, he knew what he was doing when he got involved with Kim. And in a way, that's a total FU to a lot of people who felt like Kim was someone who was made famous based on, you know, a porn tape. And you know, who knows, they might actually love each other, who actually knows. But the thing I took away, besides him trying to call Kim the new Marilyn Monroe, which is not true, was the fact that he made it seem like that him and Kim are out here struggling for money, and that he was still trying to build up wealth for his daughter Northwest. Like, come on, Tom, really, you're trying to tell me that you guys don't have enough money to take care of your daughter for the next 18 years? Really?
Yeah, the thing I love about Kanye is Kanye is a master, and this is why a couple weeks ago we talked about TNA. I wish Kanye was in TNA, because he is a master of cutting the promo and modulating his voice, because he'll be talking at this level for 1 minute, you know, it's all about this, and then all of a sudden he has a point to make, and he'll be like, hey, you know, it's just like this, Charlamagne, and I'm trying to feel something for my daughter. Me and Kim is out here struggling, fam. You understand? We's out here grinding, but we trying to get that money. We can set up North like the Prince of Princesses. You know what I'm saying? We don't have that right now. We trying to get that, but they don't want to let us have that. And it's like, nobody has that.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because he did compare Northwest to the Prince, the royal family. He said that she's right up there with the royal family, and it's another one of those analogies. But you know what? As ridiculous as that sounds, I can see where he's coming from, because they do have to protect that baby. That baby is a walking gold mine, just like the royal baby was. So that baby is not your run-of-the-mill type pregnancy.
It's not, but the protection
That's Chris Humphrey's baby anyway. Let's be real with it.
No.
I said it. Come on to Kings of Sport, Kanye, and defend your baby.
That is Kanye's kid. Each week we're gonna cross off one musical guest that we'll never get on the show because you continue to say stuff.
Off the list, Kanye. Off the list.
Yeah, who's next week? Who can we cross off the list? Drake. What are you gonna say about Drake next week?
I was gonna say something about Drake. And he just gonna leave. Just hold on. I'm going home.
All right, add Drake to the list. You're really cutting to our guest list here.
Are you sure I'm the Charlemagne of this group? Are you sure?
That's a good point. This is 2 weeks in a row now where he's.
I pick my spots.
He's picking fights with people he knows aren't.
Alfred is more regular, more blatant about it. I'm like Floyd Mayweather. I stick and move.
He's got some subtlety. He's got some subtlety about him. That's what I appreciate. It's an art.
I hit you with it. It's like a club punch. You remember that classic club punch? You just sneak up behind somebody, club, hit him in the back of the head, then like fade back into the crowd.
You know what? You're Shawn Michaels when, and Alfred's Kevin Nash. I mean, he's Diesel. You're in the back, hiding behind the muscle, popping here and there. But when it comes time to fight, Alfred has to take the fall for it.
I've got the jackknife power bombs. It's all good.
I'm Kevin Nash at the MSG incident and Alfred's Triple H. You got to stick around to take the repercussions.
Yeah.
I move on the greener pastures.
I think getting fat and happy.
So you get the job to the Warrior. That's your punishment.
Coming up next week on the Kings of Sport, exclusive anyway with Alfred and Kanye West.
How great would that be? analogy for analogy. You know, I like the Kanye West stuff, though. I really liked it. I enjoyed the quotes. You guys turned me onto it. I did hear the entire Sway interview, but I didn't really get towards the Charlamagne, the God interview. But I appreciated that more just based on how quotable he was. And I think he knew. Here's the thing about Kanye West. Ever since he started dating a Kardashian, who, say what you want to say about their talents, but she has learned in the 24-hour news cycle era to become famous and stay famous, which is a talent in and of itself. Kanye West is a soundbite and publicity stunt a second ever since he's got with Kim Kardashian, and that can't be a coincidence.
And it helps that he's making TMZ headlines, and unfortunately those headlines are usually for attacking paparazzi, but you know he's found a way to stay more than relevant long after his album's been out.
Yeah. I mean, it's their fault. He told him it wasn't safe for them in this city.
I still prefer the Kimmel interview over today's interview, though.
Yeah. To me, the Kimmel interview is still number one on the list of great Kanye interviews over the past year. But I'm starting to become a fan of the Breakfast Club. I like their dynamic, and you know, like we said, every show needs that the guy that just pokes
or two.
as Marcus is our DJ envy, he keeps everything simple.
Marcus keeps us out of jail. That's it.
Yeah. At 3 a.m. WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans. Yeah, Marcus, it's Alfred. They caught me hiding behind the bar again.
I didn't do it.
Me and Xavier Woods. So yeah, we're definitely thankful for great stories in segment four each and every week like Kanye West. But before we get out of here, we got a quick addition to the list. And since none of you guys left feedback, maybe you was already in the turkey coma. What's that chemical, Marcus? The trichinosis?
Tryptophan.
Maybe it's already put you guys to sleep, giving you the itis. So don't worry. We'll hit you guys back up another week with the list. But we're going to give you the things that we are thankful for this Thanksgiving season. Let's start off with our local and resident provocateur, Big Nasty. What are you thankful for this year?
Okay, well, it's obvious that we're all thankful for our family. So quick shout out to my brothers, Mounier and Anani, and my parents. Yeah, that's great. But I'm not going to put this on my list. It's obvious. I'm thankful for my family. Everybody know that. But for the first time in a long time, I'm thankful for something that has to do with USC. I grew up born and bred USC. My dad went to USC. I was born and raised to be a USC guy. And I'm thankful for Coach Orgeron,
who has installed
action in the USC brand. I'm telling you right now, I watched USC Stanford. Hell, I watched USC Colorado. And for the first time in years, I felt something while watching USC. And it was a good feeling. I know USC, UCLA will not be a heavily contested brawl. It'll be a rivalry locally, but it's not going to be something that's going to be competing for the Rose Bowl or anything like that. We're talking about the Holiday Bowl, maybe the Hunger Bowl, the Sun Bowl. But it's going to be a rivalry because both of them hate each other. Both of them were competitive at times in the season. And Coach Orgeron, as great as he is, I don't want him to be our head coach. I think you don't have
wow.
Thanks for him right now at this moment. Thank you, Coach Orgeron, for showing emotion in the USC. But you know,
but here's
don't
the door.
Here's the door.
Yeah.
Stick around. That's what you're good at. You know, I love Orgeron, but I'm just seeing the forest through the trees. Okay? Second of all, I am absolutely thankful for our sponsor, Audible.com. Audible.com is a of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 100. No, I'm just kidding. But Audible.com, I'm telling you right now, and I say this in our promos, I'm not kidding. When I'm on a plane for 16 hours headed to the motherland, it's going to be Audible.com. I'm going to get my membership. I'm going to tell you guys all the books that I listen to. And this is going to be my saving grace from going crazy by sitting around and going stir crazy on a plane. So I'm very thankful for our great sponsors out at Audible.com. Let's just give it up for Audible.com. Come on. Last but not least, I am thankful for fantasy football. You knew it was going to be good. Listen, I didn't have a great week this past week. For those of you who know or do not know, I rested my starters, okay? Because we got a big game coming up. But I have established myself as the premier king in the king of sports. I am the king of kings when it comes to fantasy football in the kings of sport. I have the best record in fantasy football at 9-3, and it is on me to go to the playoffs and put it down for my counterparts and win our league in the Briscoe Sanders Fantasy Football League. I'm thankful for the ability to be dominant. I'm in 6 fantasy football leagues, all of them, threat to win a championship. And if and when that happens, you will get, and this is exclusive, a 6 trophy photo shoot where I'm wearing nothing but the trophies. 6 trophies, big nasty, no clothes, on the Kings of Sport Facebook page. I'm thankful for Thanksgiving. Better get some big trophies. Back to you, Brother Nate.
I am thankful for the Facebook policy that will not allow that photo onto the group. Terms of service violation for that photo.
Yes, I co-sign it. All right, I'll go next. First of all, as a TNA fan this year, I'm thankful that Ace and Ace is dead. Hallelujah. 18 Woo! Months is 17 and a half months too long, and I'm just glad it's over. Now, if only we could figure out who's going to own this company and what we can do with Taz, it'd be a perfect world. But Ace and Ace being dead is a good start. Second, I am thankful for the good people at Place to Be Nation. Place to Be Nation has been a great relationship with these guys. If you haven't had a chance to listen to their shows, you owe it to yourself to check them out. TJ McClune is down at Place to Be Nation now, so his show's on there. They got a lot of great retrospective shows in terms of if you're an old school wrestling fan. I think one of the shows, they go back and take a look at the Monday Night Wars and review old Nitros. A couple nights ago, I just was up for some reason working. I'm like, you know what? Let me go back and listen to the archives and then just listen to the wealth of shows. And the show I heard last night, they did a review of Heroes of Wrestling. That famous or infamous, yes. Yes, the Jake the Snake Roberts pay-per-view. And it was hilarious. I mean, I've heard reviews of Heroes of Wrestling before, but I can never get enough of hearing people's opinions about that terrible train wreck of a show. So that was cool. So shout out to Place to Be Nation. Thankful to be associated with those guys this year. And finally, I am thankful for this show. You know, it's in all seriousness, it's been a up and down year for me. And, you know, some good, some bad. Everybody listening, for the most part, if you've been with us from day one, you know my story and, you know, kind of the transitions in my life. But it's good to have consistency, and it's good to have normalcy in your life. And, you know, being able to do the show for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, depending on how long Marcus hits the record button. It's good to it's good to have some place, you know, I can talk about what I love and, you know, do it with people that I enjoy talking sports with. So, you know, big up to Marcus, big up to Alfred. It's been a great 37 episodes, and this is just the beginning, man. Like, y'all ain't seen nothing yet. Like, we are just starting to get our groove, and I can guarantee this. I can't guarantee much, but I can guarantee that we will be on the air on iTunes and other formats much longer than Ed Orgeron will be the head coach of USC. So,
thank you.
Poor Coach O.
Brother Marcus, what are you thankful for?
First off, I am thankful for my wonderful girlfriend. I have to get that in there.
I know.
Because she still listens. The fact that she listens to all the shows, I mean.
Yeah, we didn't listen like around show 25.
Yeah, no, she listens to all of them.
That's great.
So that's first up on the list. Second of all, I'm thankful for my employment. I really enjoy my job. And as you have heard, if you've been listening to the podcast, I worked for a company that I despise working for 4 years. And it's been night and day going from BET to Yahoo. So I'm very blessed to have a situation.
You said difference is black and white?
I did not say that. I'm very pleased.
He said he went through some dark times in the past.
And I can see the light, boy. I see the light. I'm thankful to have a job where I don't consider it work. I just, you know, it's just part of my day. So, and lastly, I am thankful for John Pollock and Wei Ting, because if it wasn't for their show, then I wouldn't have come across Nate Milton, and therefore we wouldn't have this show. So I would like to thank our Canadian neighbors and guests of the show, friends of the show up north, for doing what they do now for 4+ years. And, you know, podcasting was something I never thought about doing until I heard their show. And then coming across Nate from his appearances on The Law and whatnot, and somehow we found Alfred, so.
I was walling around somewhere on the streets. No, I like to add that too. You guys are getting all sentimental, making me look like an arrogant jerk. Okay, I'm gonna add Nate and the whole entire family that I'm thinking. When I said family, I meant you guys too.
So We're not African.
You guys are still my family, you Africans. I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna bring home some war paint and all that stuff. And we're gonna beat some drums and we're gonna have a kumbaya session. And we're all gonna be African.
Are you gonna be there for Kwanzaa? Do they celebrate Kwanzaa in Africa?
Not as much. No.
Oh, so that's just an American thing.
It's an American made up fabrication.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, everybody that celebrates Kwanzaa.
So, yeah, I'm thankful for those.
Somebody out there, like Ronnie or Henry or KME, somebody just like.
I bet you KME does, though.
Yeah, he got the KME off already.
Yeah. Sorry, KME.
Professor KME.
Yeah, he is a professor. Shout out to KME.
I saw that. That's a great album.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good list, everybody. I think, you know, like much like Marcus said, you know, big up to the people that inspired this show. John and Wade, prevalent among them. Our good friend Bobby Fresh and the work that he did. And also, you know, like national people. Like PTI was a big inspiration for this show. The Jalen Rose podcast team. I think we started a little bit after them.
We started around the same time as Jamel and Mike, his and hers.
Okay.
They started the day after Super Bowl, and we started a month later in March.
Yeah, we started right during March Madness.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it's there's a lot of great shows out there. There's a lot of variety out there on iTunes and Stitcher and Podcast Land and all those great sites. And we're thankful for you guys that you guys download us each and every week or every other week or however frequently you download the podcast. For those of you who have been with us from day one and know about the unicorn, to those of you that just started listening to us a couple weeks ago. So we thank you for that, and we'll keep doing it for you.
And, so, since we mentioned John, just an early congratulations. I don't know the exact date because this has been a whole mystery, but I know he's getting married soon. And by soon, I think sometime in December. So congratulations and best of luck to you and Dee.
Yeah, with Pollock, you never know. He could be married by now. Just like,
who knows? it wouldn't surprise me.
Like, when he went to Russia, he got married over in Russia. He found the nicest chapel. And what's your boy? Prokhorov did the ceremony.
You have married Kiss.
And, who was it? Putin stole Bob Kraft's
Super Bowl ring.
Yeah. Putin was there. He was the ring bearer, but they had a hard time getting the ring from him. So big up to John. Good people. Like, you know, I know people hear the voices that come out of the iPod headphones or the computer speakers or whatever every week, but John Away, like, legitimately good dude. So it was cool meeting him and hanging with him in the brief time I was up in Canada. So it wasn't all bad. Poutine is great. That's another thing I'm thankful for this year. Poutine is excellent. So that's gonna do it for this week. I mean, we are visionaries here at the Kings of Sports, so you might be listening to this show right now, 2013. We already working on the show for 2023. So in case anybody wants to hit us up and discuss those future shows, Marcus, where can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And he got the Instagram too, right? You got the Instagram so they can see you in your suits and stuff.
I don't wear suits, man.
That's Alfred's gimmick?
That's only Alfred.
I wear suits.
Well, Big Nasty, where can they follow you and your suits?
Follow me and my suits on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Go to Bleach Report, read the articles, watch the videos, and if it passes the proper channels, stay tuned for a very controversial episode of WWE WTF. That's all I'm going to say for now.
You going to be naked on that too?
You never know, man. It's going to be controversy at its finest. You might get more from what you asked for. More
inches. Talk about shucking and jabbing.
Yeah.
And you can follow me on Twitter and the number 8 MOZAK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at CosPod on Twitter. Head over to iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Land, download the show, like, rate, review, share it with your friends. It's a great holiday gift. It's free and it's the gift that keeps on giving. You can also check out my football games. I do high school football games down here in Newport News, Virginia, and we got some coming up this weekend on nnpstv.com. Check out my Twitter page, and you'll see all the dates and times for those great contests that you can watch while you're still in your turkey coma. So that's it for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. It was a fun time, a great time, and we'll do it again next week. So unlike Peyton Manning, we live in the regular season and the postseason. So all year round, we give the people what they want and what they need.
He's already turned on his boy that fast. He's already turned on Peyton. Okay.
Now he's turned him away too. We thought he was our last hope.
Yeah, you go ahead and cross Peyton off the list. Andrew Luck, while you're at it. So that's going to do it for this week. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody out there. Be safe. Enjoy the holidays. And we'll do it again next time. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, for Big Nasty, and I do mean nasty, Alfred Cunningham, this is the Godfather Nate Milton. Happy Turkey Day, y'all. You've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.